This is Beth Smith. I'm over at Gene Hanfeld's house at 237 Chavanaugh Avenue on November 24th in 2003. And we're going to talk about Gene's life and her work with the Frying Pan Arkansas project. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning, Beth.
Let's talk a bit about your family.
All right, Beth. My maiden name is Archuleta. I was born in the San Luis Valley in the little village of San Pablo near the oldest town of Colorado, which is named San Luis. My grandparents were from that area.
Where'd they come from originally?
My grandfather and grandmother on my mother's paternal side came from a little village in northern New Mexico. I think the name of it was Cerro. And I don't have the exact date when they became residents of the little village of San Pablo, but we're assuming that it was probably around 1880. Because my grandfather, Feliberto Bahil, was born in 1882 in San Pedro, which was a little village next to San Pablo. The way that it has been explained to me is that the distinction between San Pedro and San Pablo was the Culebra River runs between the two little villages. And the post office was established in San Pablo. So when we were asked to identify where we came from, We usually said San Pablo, although the little community was San Pedro.
And when were you born there?
I was born November 11, 1939, in San Pablo. I was born at home. And then we lived next to my grandparents. My father had purchased some property next door, and he built an adobe house. And Dad was born in Alamosa, Colorado. He lost his mother when he was 2 years of age. He had a sister who was 8 years old, and their mother died in childbirth. His father remarried and went on to have a family of 15 children. Of course, Dad spent most of his younger life living with his sister, Delfina. And when Dad was in the sixth grade, he was offered a job in one at the local store, country store. They sold dry goods and groceries. And the proprietor was so pleased with Dad's salesmanship that he, instead of returning to school, he worked in that store for a couple of years. And then during the Depression, Dad signed up for the CCCs and spent about a year and a half in Nancy, Texas, working for the Civilian Corps, the CCCs.
Yeah.
Then upon his return, Dad, the jobs were scarce in the San Luis Valley, so Dad went to work for the Union Pacific Railroad. He was stationed in Lookout Mountain in Colorado. It was a temporary job. He returned to San Pablo, and in 1945, he received a telegram from the Union Pacific Railroad in Green River, Wyoming, saying that he was being offered a job if he wanted it. They were looking for cooks to work in their roundhouse. So Dad accepted the job. I started first grade in September of 1945, and so I was pulled out of school. We left in December. My father and two of his cousins loaded up an old jalopy and headed west for Green River, Wyoming, which is located in the southwest part of the state. Grandma and Grandpa the Hill took us to Fort Garland and put us on the train where we were supposed to meet Dad in Green River, Wyoming. I was very resistant about the change. I did not want to leave Grandma. I cried all the way to Fort Garland. We arrived at the train depot, and I was still crying. And I think Mom, to shut me up, finally looked at me, and she said, "Well, if you want to stay with Grandma, you go right ahead." I sobered up and decided no, I needed to go be with my parents. So we boarded the train. We got to Green River, Wyoming, where Dad met us with bad news. Apparently, the Union Pacific Railroad officials in Green River, Wyoming, were not expecting three families to accompany the three men. And there was no housing in Green River unless we wanted to take up housekeeping in a boxcar. Well, Dad wasn't quite sure what he was going to do with us, and the railroad officials in Green River did some talking, and come to find out, there were three positions that were needed in the section town of Bryan, Wyoming, which was located 15 miles west of Green River. So Dad decided that it would be better to take that job than to return to the San Luis Valley. So we headed out to Bryan, where housing was available. And that started Dad's career with the Union Pacific Railroad. We went on to live in Bryan from 1945 until May of 1958, when Dad was finally granted a transfer to the town of Green River. In the meantime, when we left the San Luis Valley, Mom and Dad had three children. I was the oldest. My brother Ron was born in December of 1940. In fact, December the 11th. So on the day of his fifth birthday, we arrived in Green River, Wyoming. Then I had a brother named Albert. He was born in August of 1944, so he was only about 1 year old. So Mom had her hands full with three small children. I was not enrolled in school the rest of the year. So the following year, September of 1946, I started first grade again. And
at which school?
And I went to the Green River Public Schools. Jefferson Grade School, which I attended for 6 years. We were bused from Bryan, Wyoming to Green River during the school year. And it was not always an easy ride because Green River, Wyoming was known for its blizzards in the winter. And there were many, many days we had to walk about a quarter of a mile from where our house was located to U.S. Highway 30, which was then known as the Lincoln Highway. And we had no shelter. We would wait out by the shoulder of the of Highway 30 for the bus to pick us up. They had another stop to make further west of town, which was in a little section town of Granger, Wyoming. The bus would turn around there and pick us up, and we made several more stops along that 15-mile route before we arrived to our school. We, of course, saw that was in the days when there were no hot lunches in the school. So we brown-bagged it for 18 years. It was not an easy thing, I don't imagine, for Mom, because our family continued to grow. My brother, Elmer, was born in 1946. My brother, Bob, was born in 1948. And my sister, Julie, was born in 1953. So Mom had many lunch box sandwiches to fix every morning. And might also want to mention that Mom was a very good cook. And she was offered a job about 2 years after we were living in Bryan, Wyoming, to cook for some of the single section men that were stationed in Bryan. The railroad paid her a salary, and the individual men that she fed also paid her a small fee, which resulted in us children being very well fed. In the mornings, she had not only our lunches to fix, but she would fix lunches for the railroad workers. And in the mornings, she would be up bright and early fixing bacon and eggs and or pancakes or waffles. And it was always a feast. So we were well fed.
Wonderful. Now, did you go on to Green River High School?
Yes, I went on to Green River High School. Green River, during those years, was a small railroad town. Population remained at around 3,900 for many years. There was one high school, which included the 7th and the 8th grade. There were two grade schools. The grade school on the west side of Green River was the Jefferson High School, and of course that's the school that that I went to. The other grade school was the Washington High School, and that was located on the east end of town. And it was not until the 7th grade that the two grade schools merged. So our class became about 48 to 50 students that went to junior high. And out of those, 46 students graduated in 1958.
Well, that's great. And you went on to some other education then?
Well, when I was, excelled in business classes, typing, shorthand, bookkeeping, and I especially enjoyed English. I had taken journalism while I was a junior and a senior in high school, and I had 2 years of typing and 2 years of shorthand, and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do when I graduated from high school. I didn't want to be a teacher. I didn't want to be a nurse. I was not geared towards science and math. So I was looking at possibly going to business school, but I had not really given too much thought to it. But when I was a senior in high school in 1958, there was talk about construction of the Flaming Gorge Dam in Utah, which was, we're talking about 96 miles from Green River, Wyoming. And the newspapers carried a lot of information on construction of the Flaming Gorge Dam and reservoir. So when I was a senior in high school, and the Flaming Gorge Dam had received congressional approval in 1956. So in 1958, they were looking for personnel, including clerks, stenos, secretaries, to work on the project. And so the Bureau of Reclamation personnel officer from Salt Lake City visited our school, high school in Green River, and made a specific appeal to the students that were taking business courses. He encouraged us towards a civil service career, and arranged for a special civil service exam to be given to the business students that would be interested in going to work at the Flaming Gorge Dam. Well, that perked up my ears. That sounded very romantic to me. So I took the civil service exam in June, a month after I graduated from high school, and basically sat around and waited for this letter offering me a job. In August, I had not heard anything, so Mom took a look at me one morning. She says, "Jean, you've got to get a job." Well, Mom had gone to work in Little America in 1957 when I was a junior in high school. They were looking for someone to help with the salads.
Now, where's Little America?
Little America is a hotel, restaurant, gas station located about, at the time, about 12 miles west of Bryan, Wyoming. It was a oasis in the desert, is the way that they described it. The billboards up and down Highway 30 showed the penguin, because of the association with Little America. And at that time, it was one of the nicest, it was not a resort area, but it was a nice motel unit with restaurants and gift shops and coffee shops, and very appealing to the truckers that traveled along Highway 30.
So you went to work making salads?
So Mom went to work making salads. A year later, she was offered a job in the bakery. That was in the days when everything was made from scratch. There were no mixes. She would leave home at 4 o'clock in the morning, so she could get the homemade donuts made, and then they would bake the pies and other pastries, and it kept her busy. So she would work from, she would leave home at 4 o'clock in the morning and arrive home at 3 o'clock. And this summer job turned out to be an 18-year career for Mom.
And then what did you do?
And then, so Mom, getting back to, Mom was encouraging me to get to work. So one day she came home, I think it was around the 1st of September. She says, I have a job for you working in Little America. The college kids were returning to college. They were in need of waitresses and in need of people to work in the gift shop. So my first job was working as a waitress. And I was a very timid person, having grown up in Bryan, Wyoming, virtually by ourselves. I did not have people skills. I was terrified of that job. Luckily, 3 weeks later, I was offered a job in the gift shop, which, again, was not the kind of job I wanted to do permanently. I had contact with people. I had to give change. And I just found that communication, I just found that job very difficult. Finally, in October, I received a letter from the Bureau of Reclamation offering me a job as a clerk steno for the Flaming Gorge Dam. I was thrilled to death. I signed that form, turned it in, and in October, about the 18th of October, I went to work for the Flaming Gorge Dam.
And where were you working with them?
I was... The Flaming Gorge Dam was in a remote area of Utah. To begin with, the government had to build roads into this remote area, which would eventually become the housing government camp for government and contractor employees. Housing was not yet available for personnel in 1958. Some of the employees were living in Green River, Wyoming, and commuting. Some were living in Manila, Utah, McKinnon, Utah, which were all little communities little farming communities in Utah. Because there was no housing available for secretaries for the clerical pool, I boarded with a Mormon family in McKinnon, Wyoming, which was probably a distance of about 50 miles to the dam site.
Wow, that's quite a commute.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they got a little town over there called Dutch John.
Yes.
Is that it?
Eventually they built the town of Dutch John, Utah, which housed the government personnel, engineers, technicians, maintenance people, and secretarial staff.
Well, after that job was completed, where did you go next?
When the job was completed, I stayed there until 1964. And by then, I had pretty much decided that I was going to make a career of civil service. I was still single, happy with my single life. I had dated some, but I was not really interested in marriage. I was interested in a career. So when the Flaming Gorge offices closed their doors, I was offered two jobs. I was offered a job in Montrose, Colorado, working for the Colorado River Project, which would be the operation and maintenance office. I was not interested in that job. I preferred construction. I was also offered a job working on the Flaming Gorge, on the Frying Pan, Arkansas project, stationed in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. That was more up my line, so I accepted the job. And in July of 1964, I moved to Glenwood Springs. 2 years later, we were relocated to Salida, Colorado.
What was the Frying Pan, Arkansas project supposed to do?
Okay, the Frying Pan, Arkansas project was a Trans Mountain Diversion Project. Studies by the Bureau of Reclamation began as early as 1936. However, it was not until 1953 that a planning report under the name of the Frying Pan, Arkansas Project led to congressional approval. This project was to be a multiple-purpose trans-mountain development with its principal features including construction of the Rudi Dam and Reservoir near Aspen, Colorado, which was not too far from Glenwood Springs. The North and South Side Collection System, the Charles H. Boosted Tunnel, Sugarloaf Dam and Turquoise Lake, Twin Lakes Dam and Reservoir, Mount Elbert Pump Storage Power Plant, Pueblo Dam and Reservoir, the Fountain Valley Conduit near Colorado Springs, transmission lines, substations, and permanent operating and maintenance facilities.
Can you tell me why it was called the Frying Pan, Arkansas?
The reason for the name, there is a river called the Frying Pan on the western slope, and it feeds into the Arkansas River. Therefore, the name Frying Pan, Arkansas.
Then the Frying Pan, Arkansas project begins over there at Rudi Dam.
Yes.
On the western slope.
On the western slope.
And it continues clear out to the eastern border of Colorado?
Yes, it does. And it was through a series of tunnels, the north and south side collection system through the Boosted Tunnel brought the water over from Rudi Dam and deposited some of it in Turquoise Lake, and then more of it was brought into Twin Lakes Twin Lakes Dam and Reservoir, and then it was carried over to the to Pueblo, to the Pueblo Dam and Reservoir, with fountain with pipelines going into Colorado Springs to take water to the farms and ranches in the Pueblo area.
That's a big Trans Mountain project.
That was a very big project. This bill was signed in 1962, and it authorized $170 million, which received its final approval, and it was finally enacted into public law with the signing of the measure by President John F. Kennedy on August 16, 1962. In August of that year, President Kennedy made a two-hour visit to Pueblo, Colorado, where he addressed an estimated crowd of 17,000 persons at the Pueblo Public School Stadium. His address lauded the Frying Pan Arkansas Project and the efforts of all who made the project possible. In fact, it was, to back up a little bit, President John F. Kennedy was also enacted into law the construction of the Flaming Gorge Dam. During that, backing up to 1952, the Congress had given approval for four major water projects, the biggest one being the Glen Canyon Dam and Reservoir, which I'm sure many of you have heard of or been to. The second biggest one was the Flaming Gorge Project, and these all fell under the Colorado River Project, Colorado River Storage System. The Frying Pan Arkansas project came about 10 years later. Then, in 1962, the Department of Interior announced that the Bureau of Reclamation would establish its headquarters for the Frying Pan Arkansas project in Pueblo, Colorado, under James L. Ogilvy as project manager. Salida was one of the first towns to actively support Mr. Ogilvy for project manager because he was a native of Colorado and he was conversant with the irrigation problems faced by the eastern Colorado farmers. He was also a career government employee and was familiar with the ideas and aims of the Frying Pan Arkansas project. Separate field offices were established in Basalt, which is located near Aspen, Colorado, between Glenwood Springs and Aspen, in fact. Glenwood Springs, of course, was the first construction office, and Buena Vista had a field office. And a laboratory had also been opened in Salida in probably around 1963. So there were already three or four families in Salida that were in charge of the laboratory, which I think was located in the maintenance buildings the Forest Service maintenance buildings, I think, housed the laboratory. For the purpose of the laboratory was to start testing samples of rocks and samples of water. And then because Salida was more centrally located to the remainder of the project, there was talk of moving the construction office from Glenwood Springs to Salida. And this actually did occur in 1966. The GSA built an office on Highway 50 West, which became the project construction office headquarters for the Frying Pan, Arkansas project. Howard E. McGinnis was appointed construction engineer to head the construction office, and he was reassigned to Salida. At the time, in 1964, this construction office in Glenwood Springs probably had about 40 employees working in the office, and all of these employees were mass transferred to Salida and the construction office in Glenwood Springs, which had not been a permanent office, was closed, and Salida became its headquarters.
Well, that was quite a positive impact on the small community who welcomed the government employees with open arms.
Yes, it certainly was. Think Salida really made an effort. They wanted they really wanted the to be part of the construction of the Frying Pan, Arkansas project, and they welcomed us with open arms. Salida was still very small, a very small town at the time, and housing was scarce. Frank Butala got busy and built the Crestone Apartments on Crestone. I came out to look for housing 3 or 4 weeks prior to my actual move to Salida in February of 1966, and there was very little housing for a single person. Apartments were scarce. So someone led me to the Crestone Apartments, where I visited with Frank Butala, and he assured me that the building would be ready in time for me to occupy one of the apartments. So I accepted his offer and rented the very brand new apartment on Crestone Boulevard.
Good, and you were a clerk typist then?
No, I had worked my way up the ranks. When I
Oh.
started for the Bureau of Reclamation in 1958, I accepted a job as a clerk typist, a stenographer. And when I was reassigned to the job in Salida, the project construction engineer put me in charge of the steno pole. So I became the steno pole supervisor under the administrative division. The Frying Pan, Arkansas construction office operated in Salida a total of 18 years, from 1966 through May 1984, when its office doors closed. The remainder of the construction work was transferred to the project office in Pueblo. During the 18 years of operation, approximately 260 government employees worked under the direction of the project construction engineer, which included field office personnel working in Buena Vista, in Leadville, in Pueblo. We had a field office there in addition to the main project office. And many of the employees, younger employees, went on to other jobs, went on with other with transferred to other jobs with the Bureau of Reclamation. But a lot of employees that were ready for retirement chose to stay in Salida, which had been their home for at least 18 years. And some of those families include Clyde and Joanne Gleason, who raised 9 children here, Vern and Marge Grantham, Joe and Jenny Monserud, Bill and Sophie Arnold, Lon and Mary Bell Finley, Vernell Austin, Madge Valentine, and Herb and Nathine Senny, to name a few. These folks are still residing in Salida.
Well, good. I understand there was a fellow named John Hanfeld that was working on this project, too.
Yes. John Hanfeld, my husband, I first met him in 1958 on the Flaming Gorge Dam. John was graduating from Notre Dame, and in 1957, when these four major construction projects were getting started, and the Bureau of Reclamation was doing a mass recruitment, and so they had gone out to the colleges and universities to see if they could entice engineers to come out west and work for the projects. So John Hanfeld had his heart set on relocating west. He had grown up in Kansas City, Missouri, Nebraska, and his heart was set on moving further west. So when the recruiters came to Notre Dame, John was very eager to sign up. So I encountered John in Dutch John, Utah, when I went to work there. Of course, John had a family then. And because Dutch John, Utah was a very remote government camp, there were no movie houses, no churches, no restaurants, so people had to devise a way to entertain themselves. So Bridge and Pinochle were activities that some of the married couples took as a way of entertainment. And they went from house to house, you know, to play Pinochle and Bridge. And because I was one of the only single people living in Dutch John, Utah, I was in demand as a babysitter. So I had babysat for John and his wife. I think they had 3 or 4 children that I took care of. But in 1962, John Hanfeld and his family were transferred to Craig, Colorado, to work on the transmission lines. And I heard from them for a couple of years through Christmas cards, and then I lost track of it, lost touch of the Hanfelds. In the meantime, in 1979, while I was still working for the Frying Pan Arkansas project, we were in the process of bidding out the Poncha substation located up in Poncha Springs. And lo and behold, if John Hanfeld's name did not appear on the sign-in register that we kept in our office in Salida. Why I did not see John that day, I don't know. I must have had the day off. But about a week later, I received a call from one of the inspectors working on the Frying Pan, Arkansas project to inform me that he had run into John Hanfelt at the Poncha substation. And because they had worked previously on the transmission lines on the Flaming Gorge Dam, they were visiting about some of the people they had known back then. And Pete McCall, an old Texan and quite a character, said to John, "Well, Gene Archuleta is here. And I guess John looked at Pete. He said, Gene Archuleta, she's still single? And Pete said, yes, she is. You'd better look her up, John. So a couple of days later, evenings later, the phone rang, and it was John Hanfelt saying he was in town doing work on the Poncha substation and wanted to know if he could take me out to dinner. Well, I had also heard from Pete McCall that John was divorced. So I accepted an invitation from John to have dinner. I thought it would be an opportunity to talk about old times and people that we had known in the past. So we went out to the Samara Inn, which was located in Smeltertown, and had a nice dinner and talked about old times. And that was the start of our courtship. John continued to come to Salida during the fall of 79, not only to see how things were going with the Poncha substation, but to take me out to dinner. So in December of that year, I took John to Green River, Wyoming to meet my parents, and we announced our engagement. I was 39 years old. John is 10 years older, and we decided to get married. So in June of 1980, we were married at St. Joseph's Catholic Church.
Here in Salida.
John was offered a job. Well, John worked for the Bureau of Reclamation for 10 years. When the Curry County unit in Gunnison, Colorado was reaching its completion, John decided that he didn't want to stay with the government. He didn't want to make a government career. So he resigned and started his own electrical business, and eventually ended up with a partner. The company was known as Addison Construction, and their sole purpose was to build substations. John had graduated as an electrical engineer and preferred that line of work. So when we got married, then Ron Southard with Avery Construction Company to see if there would be a possibility of him helping them with the construction of the Mount Elbert Pump Storage Power Plant, which was, the bid had just been let, with Avery Construction Company being the low bidder. John was offered a job. So John sold the interest to his company with Edison Construction and moved to Salida and went to work for the business in Buena Vista. And about a year or two later, he started an electrical engineering branch known as ASI Power Construction System. And I retired from the Bureau of Reclamation in 1984, and John continued to work in the construction area of the project.
Did you and John have any children?
John and I never had any children, but I have 8 stepchildren. As I said earlier, I had babysat 4 of John's children when they were working on the Flaming Gorge Dam. And they went on to have 4 more children. So when I met John, he was the father of 8 children. The youngest was 13 years old, and the oldest must have been in her early 20s.
Did they live with you
here? No, they didn't live with us. Their home was still in Gunnison, Colorado. We did have 3 of the children that spent the summers with us between their school years.
And what were their names?
Beth, you would have asked me that. The oldest of John's children, her name is Terry. Terry, Diane, Matt, Kathy, Marjorie, Johnny, Jeanette, and Lorette. And I can remember that because it's 2 boys, 1 girl, 2 boys, 1 girl, 2 girls.
Well, good. How long have you lived in Salida?
I have lived in Salida since 1966.
Now, after you retired from the Frying Pan Arc government connection, what did you do?
I stayed home for about the first few months. Since John and I had decided that we were going to reside in Salida, we bought a home in 1983, which is our residence, 237 Chavano. And we spent the next year and a half remodeling and living in the mobile home that I had purchased in 1976. The reason that I purchased the mobile home because my original plans were not to stay in Salida, but I was going to be moving on with the Bureau of Reclamation, and the government during that time would pay to move your mobile home, so I decided that it would be a good investment for me. But since we decided to become residents of Salida, then we decided to buy a more permanent structure. So I stayed home from May to October, working on this house, and then I got offered a job working for St. Joseph's Credit Union. And I worked there for about 5 months. In the meantime, John was looking for someone to manage the office in Buena Vista, which was the power and controls systems, needed someone to take care of the secretarial work and the bookkeeping and all of the other work. So I resigned from the credit union and went to work for John.
How long did you work for him?
I worked for John I commuted to Buena Vista for 5 years. And then 5 years later, we bought Ron Southard out. And John was interested in phasing out construction. He no longer enjoyed going out to construction sites, but he was still interested in designing and building special control panels for power plants. And so we bought Ron out and relocated our office to Salida. Our office was located in Poncha Springs. And we continued to run that operation until, I believe it was 1994, when John sold the business to his partner, Chris Haynes, who is still operating the business under Western Control Systems, and John retired.
What was the name of the business that you owned?
The Western Control Systems, which is still being operated by Chris Haynes and his wife.
And then you both retired.
Well, we both retired from one job, and I started another job. In 1990, I bought a computer, and so that I could become a little skilled with the new technical advances. And I was wondering what I was going to do with this very expensive computer that I had purchased. Not too long afterwards, there was an ad in the Mountain Mail advertising a contract secretary for the Salida Aspen Concerts. I applied for the job and was offered the job in 1990. I take care of the bookkeeping and help Chick Maleen, who was president of the organization, to type the fundraising letters, take care of the mailing lists, and attend the concert committee meetings and take minutes. This job became more demanding as the years went by. The board of directors changed, and so did the dynamics of the job. So I'm still involved with the Salida Aspen Concerts.
But you're no longer working for them, are you? You're a volunteer.
Well, I do both. Uh-huh. Yes, I do both.
Uh-huh. Very good.
I was very interested in the history of the Salida Aspen Concerts. When I took the job, I inherited boxes and boxes of newspaper clippings and reports and information, which over the years I have gone through and put in a historical context. So I have a permanent history now of the Salida Aspen Concerts since they began in 1977.
Well, tell us a little bit about the history of the Aspen Concerts.
Okay. Salida Aspen Concerts began in 1977 with one concert, which was the result of U.S. soil wanting to bring some serious chamber music to Salida. U.S. Soil was owned by the Lionel family, Joe Lionel. And I'm sure some of the old-timers remember he had quite an operation with the U.S. Soil, had his own jet, and was very instrumental in bringing Salida Aspen Concerts to Salida. going so far as to take his jet to Aspen, bring the musicians to Salida, and return them to Aspen. And this first concert was met with interest. So the following year, the Aspen Music School and Festival was in the process of doing some outreach concerts to some of the communities like Montrose, Carbondale, closer to Aspen, with the farthest outreach being Salida. So the Lionels just went to Aspen in 78 and met with the board and, you know, said to them, hey, we are really interested. What can you do to provide us, six concerts during the summer? So they got together and they worked out an agreement. And so in 1978, six concerts were introduced to Salida with musicians from the Aspen Festival that takes place in Aspen for 9 weeks during the summertime. So these were all young musicians that were attending school from all over the world. And when the board of directors, including Joe Lionel, George Howerton, Ray Hosford, John Held, realized that there was a real need for chamber music in Salida, they incorporated Salida Concerts into an organization.
And it's still going strong.
And it's still going strong. We will begin our 28th concert season in July. These concerts run for six consecutive weeks, beginning the first or second week in July, depending on when the 4th of July falls, and they run for the next 6 weeks. And currently, the Salida Aspen Concerts is run by a 9-member board of directors. Volunteers are part of the concert committee, which we have about 50 volunteers that take care of the volunteer work, being ushers, selling tickets at the door, distributing posters, selling ads for the program book, which is a major job and brings in some revenue to pay for the Aspen Concert Series.
Well, that has certainly brought a lot of music to Salida.
Yes, it sure has, especially in 1977 when there was such little music available, that caliber of music available in Salida.
Mm-hmm. That's an ongoing program.
It sure is.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say you were married in the local Catholic Church. You've also been very active in church work, haven't you?
Yes, I sure have. I became a member of St. Joseph's Catholic Church when I moved to Salida in 1966. And I have been active in the Altar Society, which is an organization that helps clean the church and among other things. I have also been, I'm presently on the parish council to give advice to the priests. I have been a member of the Helping Hands for years. So this is the organization that provides dinners for funerals.
Mm-hmm. And are you still a member of the where they keep the money. What do you call it? You could
St. Joseph's Credit Union?
I think it's a credit.
Oh, yes. Yes. I also, about 5 or 6 years ago, they were looking for someone to be on the credit committee, so I volunteered for that job. And the first couple of years, we had a couple on the credit committee that were retired that would show up at the credit union every morning, whether there was a loan to review or not. And they expected me to do the same thing. And I finally said to these guys, I says, I still have a job. I'm still working. I can't possibly show up every morning unless there is a loan to look at or not. So my duties changed somewhat. And so I got called only if there was a loan to review. But yes, I am still actively involved in the St. Joseph Credit Union, which I think was begun in 1960 by Father Gallagher, who wanted to help some of the some of the local families get loans. So the St. Joseph's Credit Community was started then, and it was Catholic originally, but quite a few years ago it opened up to the community. So now anyone can go in and apply for a loan.
Well, anything else you've done to help build the community?
Well, I also worked for the United Methodist Church, which you are a member of, Beth.
Yes, I remember you there.
In 1995, I had a little time on my hands because John and I had sold our business in 1994, and I was looking for something to do in addition to the Salida Aspen concerts and other activities. And so I had stopped at our parish office, and I had asked the secretary, Little Mary, if she knew of any part-time jobs that were available that I was interested. A week later, she called and she said that the United Methodist Church had just brought in a new minister, and she was looking for a secretary, and Little Mary wanted to know if I was interested in applying for the job. She sent me the form. I applied for the job and got accepted, so I went to work for Pastor Chris Richardson in November the 1st of 1995 as part-time secretary. And I worked there through December of 2000 for a total of 5 years.
Mm-hmm. That's quite a long time. Now, you think back over your years at Salida. What are some of the changes that you've seen in the town?
Oh, I have seen many changes, Beth. In 1966, Salida was still small town USA. All of the businesses were located right in the downtown area. Salida had a shoe store, a men's store, two department stores, Cruise Bags, Everybody's Store, which was more of a family store, more inexpensive, prices. Sharps, which was a dress shop. Gilbert's, another dress shop. Moto Day, a dress shop. Three drug stores on one block. Two sporting goods stores.
And what was the population about that time?
The population, about around 5,000.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything during the wars? Was there anything going on in Salida that helped the war effort?
let's see, in 19, okay, the Vietnam War was going on during the time that I moved to Salida, and, you know, it escalated in 1967, 1968. I don't recall too much. I do remember that the Mountain Mail at that time carried national news, and, you know, the front pages contained a lot of information on the war, but I can't remember that it affected Salida too much. Mm-hmm. I think what affected Salida the most was in the 70s was probably the economy was not very strong, and I don't even know whether it was the economy. The dynamics were changing. Gibson's came in to put up a store on Highway 50, and that caused the two sporting goods stores downtown to close. And then when Walmart moved into town, it created more businesses to close. And I think, small towns were changing. And as some of these Walmarts and Gibsons and Kmarts were working their way into the small communities, leaving little room for mom-and-pop stores.
You're right. Now, Salida was always known as a railroad town. Did you notice particularly when the railroad left that Salida collapsed?
It was beginning to decline. I can't remember whether there were still passenger trains in Salida in 1966. But I think if there were, it was probably very limited. The station was still intact. And I think at the time I had an occasion to visit the railroad station because Continental Trailways had their office in the railroad station, and I had taken the bus to Denver on a couple of occasions, but I think the railroad was pretty well facing out.
Mm-hmm. Anything else about your life in Salida that you'd like to tell us?
Well, I have always have been very happy in Salida. I think it's been a very progressive community. Politics have been interesting, but I think there's a genuine interest in by business people in Salida succeeding, and I see a lot of positive results when the mining closed in 1980, then there were a lot of empty storefronts, and people began to come in with art galleries and gift shops. In fact, Salida was recognized a few years ago for having one of the best art galleries in the state, in the area.
That's interesting because I know you're an artist. Can you talk a little bit about the art things in Salida?
Okay. Well, I became interested in art while working on the Flaming Gorge Dam. I took a brief course in oils and decided I was really interested in art. When I lived in Glenwood Springs, I took another workshop. And when I moved to Salida, I was very eager to get started in art. And when the Colorado Mountain College first opened in 1973, Henrietta Hosford was offering a class in watercolors. So I signed up for the class and became very interested in the arts. I met a lot of artists through Henrietta Hosford, and I have continued to paint and continue to be involved. When Art of the Rockies started, I became a member, and I still belong to the Art of the Rockies. That was founded by Noni Payne of the Willow Tree Frame Shop. She and Picey Hilton was another very instrumental in seeing that that artists could be seen and recognized, and had donated one of his buildings for an art gallery, which we used for several years.
Yes, we got a strong art community going.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Uh-huh. So many people that retire that come to the Valley are artists and musicians. So Mel Strawn, is B. Strawn bought the Hosford's property in Poncha Springs, and they are artists themselves, and they have done a lot to promote the arts.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very good. You covered a lot this morning. A lot of different topics, and I'm sure you'll think more you want to add, but we'll see about that later. So thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome, Beth.